Will you please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Please respect our speaker and silence your cell phone, please. Our speaker is being recorded for her permission. CDs can be purchased from Darren. I'd like to introduce this evening's speaker, Leslie, from Dana Point.
Yeah. I'm Leslie, I'm an alcoholic. And I want to welcome the newcomers. When I was new to AA, I was terrified. And I didn't necessarily think that I was an alcoholic. So the first meeting that I went to, I just raised my hand and I said, my name is Leslie. And then there was like a little pause and then everybody clapped. And it took me a while to actually believe, like it says to my innermost self, that I was alcoholic, because I was in a lot of denial. And the funny thing too is I thought, well, I'm just gonna go check out a meeting. You know, all right, if you're not alcoholic, you usually don't just, hey, let's go check out a meeting. So I thought, well, you know, probably I'll go and I'll check out a meeting, and then people that are at the meeting will say, oh, no, she can't be, you're not an alcoholic, honey. What are you doing here? Go home. Go have fun. And no one ever said that to me, ever. And I remember the first meeting I went to, too, I was really concerned about what I should wear to not look like an alcoholic. So I picked a really pretty sweater and, made my hair look nice and everything. But obviously, I couldn't be an alcoholic if I haven't had a pretty sweater. So let's see. My sobriety date is November 20th, 1994. So I just turned 18. Yeah. Okay. 18. Finally an adult. I began drinking. I was pretty young when I started drinking. In fact, I can remember being very young, and because my parents drank in the house all the time, so I was always asking for sips of my dad's beer. And I didn't like wine that much when I was a toddler, but I grew to like it later. But I would ask for sips of beer all the time, and I remember being young, like 4 or 5 years old, asking for my own glass. I wanted my own glass of beer. And so my dad loved me so much, he gave me my own shot glass full of beer, and I drank it down quickly. I felt that warm feeling, and, you know, that I just loved the taste of beer. And then, but I drank it down really fast. You know, I'm a really little kid. So I went into the backyard, and I ran out through the backyard to the back door, and I threw up. And my thought was that I cannot let my parents know that I threw up, or they won't give me more beer. So pretty much right away, I loved it. I loved the feeling produced by alcohol. And I think, you know, even from that point, of course, I didn't continue as a daily drinker from the age of 3 or 4, but I did experience the feelings of being restless, irritable, and discontent when I was really young. And I can remember wanting people to like me. I always wanted to be liked. And when there was show and tell in kindergarten, I wanted to make a good impression on the class, so I went to the neighbor's house and took the bunny rabbit out of their cage and walked it to school as my bunny rabbit for show and tell. And my teacher said, is that your bunny? There's no cage or anything. Oh, yeah, that's my bunny. So I got into trouble for that, but I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. I just wanted that to take that bunny so I could make a good impression. So it kind of started off. I kind of had some problems, obviously. So by the time I was about 14-ish, I was really depressed. And 12, 14, I was very depressed, just like a very sad child. And then I found drinking. I found alcohol. And, you know, I still wasn't drinking every day or anything, but on the weekends I would find it with friends. And I started, when I drank, it made me feel pretty good. You know, I wasn't as concerned about what people thought about me. I didn't feel as depressed. I felt happier. I would be silly and do ridiculous things, and I was good. And then it started getting not so good. So really, from the beginning, I was a blackout drinker, and I only kind of remember, I can kind of, you know, put pieces of my story together from what other people told me too, because I don't remember a lot of things that I did. But I was, you know, I was a blackout drinker, and I never really drank for to have a couple of drinks. I drank to get drunk. Every time I picked up, it was with the intention of getting loaded. So let's see, what happened? Well, I think I was probably about 80, well, I was about 18. I hit a pretty big bottom, but I wasn't quite done. I graduated high school, and I moved down to Florida, and I was excited to move away from home because I could drink and do what I wanted to do the way I wanted to. Because at home, you know, my mom was really, she's like kind of on my back about it, you know, didn't like it. And so I got rid of, you know, those people that were trying to love me. And I moved in with my older brother, who was, I mean, he was actually the real problem in the family. He was like the, you know, the real problem child. So he was the identified problem. I was secondary. So I moved in with him, and I drank a lot. And it was like the first time that I was really kind of quote unquote free to just drink. And it was kind of fun at first again, but then, you know, it turned into trouble again, blacking out and just doing ridiculous things. And then I got to a point there where I started to use drugs, and I got into some really bad situations, and I decided that I wanted to stop. I wanted to stop it. Not drinking really, but I wanted to stop using drugs. So I went back home to my parents' house, and I stopped using drugs, and I just drank. I wanted to just drink occasionally. So that was my plan. I was just going to drink occasionally. I was going to, you know, turn myself around. And so I went to college. I started going to college, and I decided I would study psychology because I knew I was really messed up, and I figured I could try and figure out a way to help myself. And so psychology seemed like a good way to go. And I was going to be a psychiatrist. I was going to go the whole nine yards and like go to medical school and everything. But then I got to school, and it was kind of hard. So I thought, well, I'll just get a master's degree in psychology. I can still be, you know, a counselor, and that's good. And then for psychology, they wanted me to take a foreign language, and that was hard too. So I switched majors to social work, and I ended up graduating with a social work degree. But as I was going through college, I had a job as a bartender, and I only drank while I worked. So I thought, you know, and I only worked 2-3 nights a week, so I thought I was doing pretty well. And it was a good job for me because I was attending bar, and the owner of the bar, I asked him, I said, is it okay if I drink on the job? And he said, oh yeah, we encourage it. And I said, great. You know, so I knew I had a good job, and I made great tips, and it was going pretty good. And then while I was working at that job, this guy came in, and I had a boyfriend at the time, but this guy came in, he was so nice, and so we totally hit it off, and he, though, was moving. He just graduated from San Diego State, and then he was moving to San Francisco to start a new job. And I was in Buffalo, New York, so that's where I grew up. So I kept in touch with that guy and started writing letters back and forth, and I graduated college, and I decided to move out to San Francisco to So I broke up with that guy I was dating, and I took off, and I started dating this guy, and things were going good. And I knew that I didn't want him to know what I was like when I drank, because my thing was I'm really super duper nice, totally nice, nicest person you would ever want to meet. And the problem is that I'm not capable of saying the appropriate thing at the appropriate time. So when I would drink, I was able to. It wasn't appropriate, but I was able to say it. You know, so all that anger and frustration that I would kind of hold on to, and it would build and build and build, it would just explode. And it would usually just explode at the hostage or boyfriend I had at the time. So when I moved to San Francisco, I knew my pattern, and I didn't want to. Like, I was the kind of person that would, you know, I would date the guy, and then I'd get loaded, and then I'd pick the fight, and I'd start, you know, I'd get really, really angry, and then he'd try to get away from me, and then I'd throw myself on the hood of his car, and I mean, it was dramatic. So I knew I didn't want to get into this pattern. So when I moved to San Francisco, I decided, you know, the problem is I live in Buffalo, New York. The problem is that the winners are horrible. The problem is the Buffalo Bills team lost 5 Super Bowls in a row. Obviously, you would drink too if you lived there. So moving to San Francisco, fresh start, I said, I don't need to drink anymore. I'm cured. So I took the geographic cure. And I stopped drinking, pretty much. I drank a little bit here and there. I was very proud of myself, actually, because I would go to a bar, like, after work with all the coworkers, and I'd order one beer, and I would nurse the beer all night. So obviously, I don't have a problem. So, but what happened was, when I was doing that, is I got so depressed. I was miserable. I was suicidal. I didn't want to live anymore. So what I found out later is that alcoholism is a disease, and it's chronic, progressive, and fatal. And because I have that disease, if I take away alcohol and I don't replace it with anything, I'm going to be very miserable. And that's what happened. So I didn't know that at the time. So instead, I went to a psychiatrist, and I started taking antidepressants, which I have no problem with antidepressants. I know some people in AA, they think that it's not a good thing or whatever. To each his own. And I think antidepressants, if they work, good. It's better than killing yourself. So, for whatever reason, that time when I took the antidepressants, it didn't really help. Oh, and then the doctor was asking me about drinking, and I was like, oh, no, I don't drink, you know, because I really believed that I wasn't drinking anymore. So he did mention, you know, don't drink on the antidepressants. Oh, no problem, I don't drink anyway, no problem. So I did drink on the antidepressants, and the last time that I drank, it wasn't anything that was, like, the most incomprehensible demoralization I had experienced, because I had experienced quite a bit up to that point. But the last time I drank, I was with that boyfriend at the time and his roommate, and we were drinking, he had Guinness, and I liked Guinness. That was a nice beer. So I liked it, and so I was just going to have one, you know. And then, because I could control it. I thought I could control it at this point, so I was just going to have one. But man, that just tasted so good that I had another one, another one, another one, another one. And then we ran out of those, and then whatever's there, then it doesn't matter, right? You get to that point where it's like, who cares? It's going to be anything. So I kept drinking and drinking, and I don't even know how it all started, but we were playing with a Ouija board. I don't know why, but you know, you ask the Ouija board questions, put your fingers on the little pointer thing, and then the little pointer thing moves around and gives you the answers. So we were asking questions, and I don't even know what we were asking, but basically, bottom line, they accused me of cheating. Yeah. They totally accused me of pushing the thing to say what I wanted it to say. That's about all I needed. I was pissed. because don't you know that I am special and that the spirits commune through me? So I did my little thing that I like to do when I get really angry after a few drinks. You know, I let it all out. And the other thing that you should probably know about me is what my first sponsor called that I had was, it's called the Cinderella Syndrome. And the Cinderella Syndrome is the idea that if I could only find the proper mate, get married, I would be taken care of for the rest of my life, and I wouldn't have to take care of myself anymore. So, in the midst of my drunken stupor, as I'm picking a fight and yelling at them about, you know, why, because I'm cheating, and I don't even know what I was saying, but in the middle of it, this guy that I'm dating, you know, we're dating for like 8 months or something, and I'm like, when are you going to marry me? Loaded, and he's like, you know, why would I want to do something stupid like that? So that was another big fight. And I don't even know how that night ended. All I know is that I woke up the next morning and I was embarrassed and I felt really awful. And he had not seen me like that. That was the first time that he saw me loaded like that. And it turns out that his mom is an alcoholic. So here he was, you know, brought up with a crazy alcoholic mother, and there I was. So he said, you know, you really changed a lot when you were drunk. He said, you know, that's not okay. You know, that's not normal behavior. And that's not, it's just definitely not the first time I ever heard that, but I heard it extra loud that day. And so I had the thought in my head, you know, let's call it a moment of clarity, whatever, but it was very clear, a thought in my head that said, you're an alcoholic. And it wasn't like my regular voice. So that was on a Sunday. I sobered up on a Monday. I called central office in San Francisco, and I thought, well, I'll just go to a meeting if it's convenient, if it's near my house, you know, not making any big commitments here. And there was a meeting 2 blocks from my house, and it was a beginner meeting for new, you know, they call it a beginner's meeting for new people. So I thought, well, that's pretty convenient. I should probably take that as a sign and go. So I went, and I literally, my knees were literally shaking when I walked in, and it wasn't from withdrawal. I was just terrified. And I sat down, and I didn't know what to expect at all because I didn't know anybody who was in AA. I had heard about AA while I was in college, and I was studying social work. I heard that it was a place that people can go, but I didn't really know anything about it. So I wasn't sure if they were going to quiz me and, you know, ask me all kinds of questions about my drinking, or if they were going to want to, you know, take my name and address and, you know, call me and come to my house. And I had no idea. But I sat down and someone asked me to read 3 of the steps. And I said, okay. And so I did that. And when they asked for newcomers, like I said, I just raised my hand. I said, my name is Leslie. And that was it. And the first, it was a speaker meeting. And the first, they had a 10-minute speaker and then the full speaker. The first 10-minute speaker, he was so fun and funny, and I was just very surprised because I figured, you know, I'm going to a place where no one drinks anymore. People should be crying, right? People should be miserable, because that's how I was without drinking before I went to AA. I was miserable. I was crying a lot. I was depressed. So I figured, you know, it was just going to be completely sad, and it wasn't. He was cracking jokes. He was laughing. He was laughing at his own jokes. He didn't care if you thought it was funny or not, because he just liked, he liked people. You could tell he just liked people. He liked who he was, and he was super comfortable with that. And I was not. So straight off the bat, I wanted what this guy had. And then the other speaker came up, and he told his story, Chip G. In fact, I just got a Facebook message from Chip G from San Francisco the other day when it was my AA birthday, and he said, happy birthday. And it's so nice because he's the very first speaker that I ever heard, and he sent me a happy birthday message. So I related to his story, and we were totally different. He was a lawyer. He was, you know, older. But I related, totally related to his story. I related to the feelings. I related to how he said he would sit on the bar stool, staring in the mirror, thinking about how great his life was going to be one day. I loved to do that. I would sit on the bar stool, look in the mirror, look at all the beautiful bottles, and think about how great my life was going to be. As soon as they came in, whoever they were, as soon as they came in and they discovered me, because I'm super talented, and they were going to pluck me off the bar stool and raise me up to a place of prestige and honor. That's what I was going on that assumption. Needless to say, that never happened. So I related with this guy because he talked about the same kind of thing. And I was like, wow, I'm not the only one that thinks that way. That's awesome. And then I met my friend Becky, who I still am in touch with today, too. She lives in Montana now. And she was a couple years younger than me. I was 24 when I got sober. She was 22, and she had already been sober for 2 years. And I was like, whoa, 2 years? It's amazing. So she and I became good friends, and we hung out a lot my first year. And that's what I did, is I hung out in AA a lot. And I had all AA friends. I ran with a pack of women, and we went from meeting to meeting together. Every Thursday night, we had a meeting at someone's house. We had a house meeting. And we would read the book and share about what was going on. And they would share about what we read about, and about recovery, and about staying sober. And I would share about my boyfriend, my job, my woes, everything that was going wrong with me. There was no recovery in any of my shares for many, many, many years. And but they still loved me, and they still told me to keep coming back. And I was still friends with a lot of them today, 18 years later. I feel very blessed that I got hooked in with a really strong group of sober women right from the beginning. Second or third meeting I went to, I got a sponsor, and she thought I was somebody else. So I raised my hand as a newcomer. By this time, I didn't believe I was an alcoholic, but by this time I'd been to a couple of meetings, so I knew what you guys did, and I didn't want to stand out. So I said, I'm Leslie and I'm an alcoholic. I didn't believe it, but I was going to say it because you guys did. So, and I wanted you to like me. So she came up to me after the meeting, and she said, Leslie, it's good to see you. And I said, and she gave me a big hug and everything. And I said, wow, you know, people are really friendly. And she said, do you want to get together and work the steps? And I said, okay. I had no idea what the steps were. I didn't know what a sponsor was. I didn't know anything. But I said, okay, because I wanted her to like me. And so she said, so now how long have you been sober now, 10 days? And I said, no, this is my third day. And she said, didn't I meet you at a meeting last week at the dry dock as a meeting place up in San Francisco? And I said, no, I've never met you before. And she said, oh, I thought I met you before. There's a girl named Leslie who I was supposed to meet here tonight. You kind of look like her. And I said, no, I haven't met you before. And she said, oh, well, do you want to get together and work the steps anyway? And I said, okay. So she was my sponsor for the first 7 years of my sobriety. Is it odd or is it God? It totally worked out. And she was awesome for me, the perfect sponsor for me. We met every week. We read out of the book, and I did my first 4-step when I had about 60 days sober. I didn't even know that there was an option to, like, put it off. I had no idea. And this is going to sound ridiculous, but seriously, I'm not even kidding. I didn't even know that for a while that people relapsed. I didn't know that that was an option. I thought, once you're in, dude, you're in. It's over. So I, at that newcomer meeting that I went to, one of the things, they had like a whole list of things to do, and one of the things was stick with the winners. Help out before the meeting, stay after, you know, talk with the people, go to coffee afterwards with people. And I totally did that. I stuck with the winners, and I didn't even know, like, these people that I hung out with, they stayed sober. They showed up. They, like, did it one day at a time. And So I worked the steps with my sponsor, and then she told me I needed to go, and after I worked all 12 steps, she told me I needed to go and work with others, and I did. You know, I basically, when she told me to do something, I did it, because for a while, I didn't know any better. But then I got smarter later on, and I thought, I don't have to do this, you know. I learned later, which was actually painful. It's actually easier to just do it. So she told me to go and work with others, and she said, you know, we can't keep it unless we give it away. So I started working with sponsees. I had my first sponsee, and oh my gosh, that poor girl. I just took her, you know, I just took her everywhere, and I dragged her around, and I kept her sober. then she didn't want to be sober anymore. So that was sad. I took it personally. I thought it was my fault, you know, like we do sometimes. And then I stopped sponsoring people for a little bit. I had to, you know, get my wares about me again. And then I started sponsoring again and did the same thing. I was like their higher power. I took them to meetings. I did everything for them. You know, it talks about one of the things I learned later is that we carry the message, not the mess. I carried the mess for a while. I would drag that mess around from meeting to meeting, and, you know, I would make them do what they were supposed to do. And then I started getting resentful. After all I've done for you, and this is how you treat me? So I went to another program for that. I like to joke, I have my black belt and Alan on. So then I found out that, again, many times over, I found out that God's in charge. And that I'm not the higher power. And I don't know what's best for anybody. I had a lot of situations where I thought I knew, and I would tell, I gave advice, I gave the best advice all the time. I would tell you what to do. Yeah, break up with that guy. That guy is not treating you right. He is no good for you, that guy. And then they're back together and they get married and I'm the a-hole. So I found out the hard way a lot of times that I don't know what's best. So let's see, what else happened? When I was about 2.5 years sober, I met my now husband, and which I just found out you will hear at this meeting here next week. Yeah, Duke F right in the front. So we were both about 2.5 years sober when we met, and I was singing backup in a sober band called The Blackouts. And Duke came to the rehearsal because he was a guitar player, songwriter, and the drummer asked him to come and play with us. So he came in and to the band. I thought, oh, he's so cute. So I stalked him because that's, you know, pretty healthy behavior for someone who's 2.5 years sober. I found out what meetings he went to. I started going to the meetings, and I started to just keep showing up where he was. And he was so shy when I first met him. He couldn't even hardly talk to me or look at me. So I was just kept showing up. And then finally, after about a month of that, he asked me for my phone number. Then he waited a week before he even called. Because, he told me later, was because, and I don't know if you guys all know this movie I'm talking about, but there's a movie called Swingers that came out. So that movie was just coming out. And that was like, that was so money, is to not call someone right away. So he was being so money. But we started dating, and I love, there's a saying in AA that I love. It's that when you get into a relationship in AA, it's like pouring Miracle-Gro on your character defects. Very true. Very true. It's hard. It's hard to be... You know what's hard about an AA relationship? I'll tell you. We're both alcoholics. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but alcoholics in general are very selfish and self-centered people. If you didn't know that, I'm sorry to break it to you. Two selfish and self-centered people trying to have a relationship is hard. It's a lot of work. And there's a lot of compromise, and there's a lot of asking myself, and I'm sure him asking himself, is this really that big of a deal? Should we argue over something like this? Is it really that important? I have to be willing to let a lot of things go, because I'm really sensitive. And if I, you know, if I take everything personally, it's not going to be a very fun life. So what I found in AA is that the steps are really important to start to allow me to get a little, let's see if I'll say it right. When I came in, I had really thin skin and a hard heart because I was easily hurt by people and things and circumstances and institutions, everything, a lot of resentments. After working the steps and being around in AA for a while, my skin has gotten thicker and my heart's gotten softer. So I can now allow people in, but I can also recognize who not to allow in all the time, if that makes sense. So, what else happened? We got married, when did we get married? 2001. And we have two little boys who are now 5 and 8. And I just want to say that I love Alcoholics Anonymous very much because it saved my life. And now I love it even more because I want it to be around for my youngest. Save a seat for my littlest one. He's so sensitive. He's so, you know, he's so restless, irritable, and discontent. He just is. But he is hilarious, too. And all my friends that are, all my alcoholic friends love him. They're all like, we love Stone. He's so awesome. Because, I mean, he's the kind of kid that does all the things that we want to do. Like, he'll come home from school, and the first thing that he likes to do is take off his pants and run around the house in his underwear. Everybody wants it, right? Okay, maybe that's just me. But he also, he likes to throw a fit. He wants what he wants when he wants it. It's like all the things that I would love to be able to get away with, but as a sober adult, I'm not supposed to do that stuff anymore. But it's fun to see it, and I'm like, yeah, that's so me. It's so what I want to do all the time. Let's see. I'll say a couple more things. I'm running out of time. I thought I wasn't going to be able to fill it up, but man, I can talk. When I was about 3 years sober, those were the super sober days. And I knew everything about everything. And I told you about it all the time. And I had every commitment. And I was on every committee. Central Office Committee, Inter County Fellowship Board Committee, GSR, everything. 12-step committee. I would take people to on 12-step calls to people's houses. I did everything. Seriously. If there was an A for AA, I had it. And that was really good for me at the time. I needed that. And I was so connected, and I went to 7 to 10 to 12 meetings a week, every week. I was so connected in, and I needed it. But what I found out, looking back on those days, was that I had a lot of ego invested in it. A lot of ego. And now, if I was myself at 3 years, looking at myself with 18 years, my 3 year self would say, she has a horrible program. She is just dry as hell. She's a fire hazard. But the difference is that I am more comfortable with who I am, and I'm not as concerned with what everybody thinks of me, what you guys are thinking of me, as much. I mean, I can't say that I totally don't care, because that would be a lie, but I care less. Not that, oh, I care less, but I care less than I did. And I don't do things perfectly anymore, thank goodness, because that was a lot of work. So hard. So now, today, I do the best that I can do, and the most important thing that I do for my AA program is I don't pick up a drink no matter what. And if I feel like I'm getting squirrely, like recently I've just kind of been in a little slump. So when I feel that way, I know that I need to do some more work. And I'm really super blessed. I have an awesome sponsor. Her name is Belle C. She's been sober for a super long time. I don't even 30-some years, you know, 37? 37 years. I mean, she's incredible. Every time I call her and talk to her about whatever's going on, I just get off the phone and I'm like, she is a genius. She is amazing. And then I'm super blessed to have awesome sponsees. There's a few of them here tonight. And they keep me sober, for sure. Because even when I feel like I'm having a bad day, I'm having a bad couple of days, couple of weeks, whatever it is, I keep in touch with the people that I sponsor. I call my sponsor. I go to a meeting. I write inventory. I was just writing inventory the other day. So it's not, you know, I still get resentful. Do you know what happened? Is I'm still human. So, you know, I'm a spiritual being, but I'm having a human experience. So life is life, and it's not always super easy, but it can be super beautiful. And I know every time, if life gets hard, or when life gets hard, I know that picking up a drink or using a drug is not going to make it easier. It's going to make it worse. So I've kind of just removed that option from the list of options. So now instead, like, I'll go to a meeting, I'll take a yoga class, I'll meditate, I'll do step work, I'll work with others. You know, like it says in our book, working with others will save the day. It really does. Because my biggest problem is me. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered, and my ego is not my amigo. So when I'm getting into self, the easiest way to get out of self is to help somebody else. So I think with that, I'm going to wrap it up and say thank you so much for listening, and welcome to the newcomers, and keep coming back.